Welcome to Wine for Normal People, the podcast for people who like wine, but not the snobbery that goes with it. I'm your host, Elizabeth Schneider, author of the Wine for Normal People book and certified wine dork. This show is sponsored by Wine Access, my exclusive sponsor. Did you know that you get free shipping on orders over $150? Also, did you know that when you refer a friend and they place an order of $150 or more, you'll both get a $50 credit? Go to wineaccess.com/WFMP to get into the site. Let them know that you found out about them through me and go get that refer a friend credit today. Now let's get to the show. I welcome to the show my friend Giulio Abrigo of Abrigo Giovanni Azienda Agricola, who some of you have met on the patron trip to Piemonte, Piedmont. Abrigo Giovanni is a small family operation operating on just 13 hectares or 32 acres, mainly in Diano d'Alba, which is the site of the winery and the family home. Diano is part of the Barolo zone on the eastern side of the region, and it's especially famed for its exquisite, complex Dolcetto, which many of you know is one of my absolute favorite wines. Dolcetto Diano d'Alba is one of a handful of DOCG zones for the grape. That means stricter controls and top Dolcetto wines are made in this area. And here the elevation, the soils, the exposition are ideal for this highly underrated grape. Abrigo Giovanni focuses on Dolcetto, but for the past 11 years, they've also made a very highly rated and awarded Barolo from the site of Rivera, which has caught the attention of many wine critics. And although not available in the U.S., they make the best nocciole, hazelnut spread, I've ever had in my life, which we will ask Giulio about too. Welcome, Giulio. So good to have you.
Thank you. Ciao, Elizabeth, and ciao to everybody. It's a pleasure to be here. It's my first time on a podcast, and particularly in English. So it's not my best, but I will try to make it.
Just stop, please. All right. Tell us about your family and how they decided to buy the property in Diano d'Alba in 1968. Because your grandparents, Giovanni and Maria, were they in wine? What were they doing before they came to Diano?
It's not so complicated. It's a long story. And I will start from what I see from my windows, because this morning when I woke up, I opened the curtains and I experienced the same feelings as every day. And it's profound wonder. Today it's a very clear day and there is a deep blue sky. The green is starting to sprout everywhere. And we have the beautiful contrast with a lot of snow that covered the mountains. So we have all the Alps around us, and we can see a quarter of the Alpine arc in Nekedai. So it's beautiful, from the Ligurian Alps to the Mount Rosa. And it's impossible for me to not be marveled every day. In our wines, we try to express the beauty of the nature in which I am constantly immersed every day since forever. So this is why my grandparents decided to move to Diano. They were from Treviso and Trezzo. If you look in west direction from Treviso, you will get the village of Diano in your complete front. So I think they followed the horizon because it was impossible to don't see Diano d'Alba that clear.
So why didn't they stay in Treviso? You know, obviously Barbaresco is awesome also.
Yeah, it is great, but principally, I asked to my grandma this many times in my life. I'm 31 years old, so I didn't live that chapter of our history. But they were in two closest villages, my grandma and my grandpa. In our areas, in the main square of the village, we celebrate the boys that turn 18, so the age of majority. And my grandparents met in there, and they fell in love. Giovanni, my grandfather, was like a brick layer.
Oh, wow.
A builder.
Yeah.
But he didn't love this job. So after the compulsory military service and after married my grandma, they planned to build their own farm. So my grandfather's dreams was to own his own farm.
Right.
So this is why.
Did he have any experience doing that? Was his family doing farming, or he just decided to do this?
His family was involved in farming.
Okay.
But there wasn't space for him.
Right.
So they need to move.
Right. So can you describe what they've told you about Diano at that time? Because right now, it's not very developed. It's kind of really small anyway, but I can't imagine what it must have been like in 1968 when they pulled up and decided to buy this farm. And then it was probably like, okay, well, I could build something because I can lay bricks. I have some experience in farming. And now what? I mean, there aren't that many growers even now in Diano, are there?
See, today we are a lot of little vine growers. It's like Diano d'Alba is 3,000 people living in there.
So small.
And there are more than 40 wineries. So it's a lot compared to the people living in there. In the past, it was not so different because I think 50 years ago, every house was like a miniaturized farm.
Mm-hmm.
So each of us had a couple of cows, some chickens, some pigs, some goats, a few hay fields, fruit trees, vineyards, hazelnuts also.
Right.
And here in Diano d'Alba were only vineyards of Dolcetto. Quindi, so the ambient was more or less like today, less houses, but the same farm that were little in the past are now a bit more bigger.
Right.
But it's like the same number, more or less.
It's so crazy. So it's like going back in time a little bit. When we visited you, it does feel like that. It feels like time is standing still. But I love that you're considerably younger than me, and I have so much to learn from you. You've said this before when we've met the other two times that I've met you in person, but your appreciation of what you have, where you are, your love of what you do, it really shows. And it's just so nice to hear that you wake up every day and are thankful and grateful for what you have. That is something I think we all can learn. So thank you for saying that, because I think it's such a wonderful thing to feel. And it's something that we all need to learn.
Yes, thank you.
Let's talk about Dolcetto for a second, because for that period of time, like when your grandparents moved there 50 years ago, Dolcetto was the workman's grape. It was like for workers. It was very popular, grown much more widely than it is now. Can you talk about what's happened with Dolcetto over the years and how it's changed from what it used to be to what it is now?
I think in the past, all the wine, not only the Dolcetto, was to pair with food without thinking too much to the label, to everything that today we look after the wine. So Dolcetto was the most easily and drinkable wine that was really good for drinking in the lunch time, so in the middle of the day. And today it's stayed more or less the same. And that's I think it was the problem some years ago, because no one was looking for a wine only to drink. So I think it's kind of strange.
For a while, it was that Nebbiolo had this big rise. And Nebbiolo has always been a little bit harder to grow and has gotten the best sites, except in places like Diano, where obviously Dolcetto does so well. And then Barbera, because some of the Barolo producers were making Barbera with a lot of oak and they were letting it hang on the vine a very long time, Barbera wound up also becoming kind of expensive and kind of not as everyday. And Dolcetto has had a harder time. And I always try to figure out why that is. And I don't know whether it's because the Italians themselves, you yourselves, think of it as less than Nebbiolo. So it's hard to bring it out and say this is fantastic. Or is it the name, because people know Dolce and they think it's going to be sweet? I don't know. I'm not sure.
I think it's, as always, a mix of everything. We can't point in a single direction. Of course, the name, it's been a problem for a while, because Dolce means Dolce, and Dolcetto is completely different from the sweet taste. But it's not the only. I think one of the problem is that the producers in first person were not so proud of the dolcetto, the variety.
Yeah.
So this is the main difference between them in the past and me today. I'm really proud of the dolcetto. I know what dolcetto can give to us. It's something I can work on it for making better. It's that the key, the important part.
Yeah, I think pride of place and being able to go out. I know you hate marketing, but some of marketing. Julio really hates marketing, guys, just so you know. He absolutely hates it. So I had to drag him onto the show because he thought it might be marketing, but it's not. We're educating people, Julio. So please. I think that it does matter a lot whether people have pride in something or not, and whether or not they feel like there's potential for things. I do want to go back for a quick question. So your father, Giorgio, started hazelnut production also in a bigger way, right?
Yeah. Making a little recap for the history, my grandparents, Maria and Giovanni, they together bought the land, they run the farm, they had the animals, and their first business was to the stable with the cows, and then also the dolcetto selling of grapes and wine. Later, around the 1980s, my father finished the school in Granzane Cavour. It was the agricultural studies. And in that school, he met my mother. So they get married in 1989. In that time, some years after, my grandpa and also his younger son, Marco, the brother of my father, they passed away. So it was a big moment of changes.
Wow.
And my father decided to keep his idea of wine production. And he stopped the cow's business. He closed the barn and he replaced some hay fields with the hazelnuts. He immediately planted a lot of hazelnuts because he loves them. He really loves the job in the hazelnuts business. And he did it in a modern way. So he bought some important machines, for example, for the harvest. So he immediately started to harvest by machine the hazelnuts. In that time, it was not so used. So it was one of the first on this land. And in this way, he was able to run both the vineyard and the hazelnuts business without too many problems.
Are they harvested at the same time?
No, this is the other side, the other good side of the hazelnuts business, because you can grow hazelnuts. And they need a different period of work during the year. So the harvest of hazelnuts is in the mid of August. It's not so great for the holidays.
Right.
So my father never took too many holidays.
No.
But it's great because you can harvest the hazelnuts and then you are just to start the vineyard business. So you can do the harvest also of the grapes.
And he sold a lot of hazelnuts to the larger companies, right?
Yes, in the past more than today, because today we are trying to selling our hazelnuts by us, or mostly part of them. In the past, it was more to harvest them. It was also important to be able to keep them at home safe. Hazelnuts, they need to be in a dry place, so you need to dry the hazelnuts before the storage. So he built his own place and machines for the storage. With this possibility, it was good to sell to other big companies. Ferrero was one of them. And to have the fresh cash flow,
yeah,
in order to be able to do really long aging on the wine or to sustain the business of winemaking.
And your mom is a really great business person also. She runs the business or ran the business.
She is. My father is only the one who produces. So if today we are living, it's only thanks to my mother. My mom, Paola, is really important for us because she carried out of the cellar the wine we produce, the hazelnuts and everything. Without she, we were today maybe selling only in the Cuneo province.
Wow.
Thanks to her, we started to sell also abroad, also in many other countries and places. So, of course, each of us is important.
Yeah, and I would say that women in Piedmont play a very, very important role. It's interesting, as opposed to other places in Italy, I feel like there's a great role for women in Piedmont. Lots of women winemakers or women who own the wineries with their husbands but do a lot of stuff like that. It's really great. It's nice to see
yeah,
it as a woman.
I agree. In the past, I also hate marketing because we always speak of things only when we think is good for the market. So maybe today we are focusing more on this, but since also my grandma had importance in the company because she decided how to build the stable, the place, the spaces, and also for my mom the same. The name of the company is Abrigo Giovanni. In the last years, my father, and still today, is driving the company. So his name is on the label. But behind, there is women's, of course.
Right.
And it's important to give them credit.
Yeah, I just think it's really great. And it doesn't seem like anybody has a problem with it, which is nice, too.
No.
So when you grew up in Diano, did you ever think about doing anything besides wine? Did you work in the vineyards? And then you went to school for enology, but did you ever think, I don't want to do this, I'm going to do something else?
I have incredible and wonderful memories of my childhood and adolescence in Diano, because it's a small village, but it has all grades of school. So many kids came to Diano from different villages in the Lange.
Ah.
And a small town also means peaceful tranquility. We were always free to move around with independence. First, I talk also for my brother Sergio, because first we moved by bike, and then when we were 14, my parents bought us a motorcycle. So we moved also after with the car. It was like total freedom. So I remember about growing up in Diano d'Alba, like an immense playground immersed in the nature. It was really, really beautiful. I only remember beautiful moments. And me and my brother, Sergio, we spend most of our free time in nature, even in the winter with the snow. I'm not kidding. You can ask my parents how many hours we spent outside the house, school, and then we were immediately out in the fields.
That is great. So did you do work, though? Did you work on the farm at all?
Yes, we grew up in the farm. When I got my first motorbike, I started to have my own personal expenses. So it was offered me the opportunity to earn monies by working in the vineyards for my parents. So I started with the basics job.
Yep.
And then I learned more and more until I got the management of the whole. So in gradual way, I didn't even notice what I'd done. And I'm always joking because I'm very close to 20 years of bottling.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah.
And you're only 31.
Yes. We always played around my parents' activities, but we did it in an active way. So they involved us really actively. It was in the middle between a game and a work.
Yep.
It really didn't have boundaries. It's difficult for me to think the two things separate.
It's just a free life. But you did decide to go to school for enology.
Yes, I decided in my own. It was a close school to home, so it was not difficult to reach the school. This was also important because I always wanted to spend time around. So I wanted to be close to my nature. But I really felt in love with the studies, the oenological studies in school, because here we have to choose the school at 14, 15 age. So it's quite early, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
In the first year, I chose the school without thinking too much. But then I started to really think that this is my path.
Do you think that when you came back full time to the winery, that you had a different idea about how to do things? And if you did, were they accepted, or was it hard to say, okay, well, this is how school is saying that we should do things? Or did you go to in Alba?
In Alba, yes.
Yeah. So there's a lot of context. It's one of the best enology schools in the world. and you have all these friends now, right, who are working. You know everybody at other wineries where maybe before you didn't know people from Roero and people from Barbaresco, maybe before you didn't know them and now you know them because you went to school with them. How did it change how you looked at things or how you did things? Or did it not change anything?
It's true. I know someone from school that I didn't know they had these important wineries. So I know today them as winemakers, as important winemakers. But before, I know them as schoolmates. So this is beautiful.
Yes.
Alba is an important oenological school. Of course, is one of the best. I had beautiful moments in that. I also learned a lot from the school. I can't say I bring home something in particular or any particular knowledge, but I discovered generally how important the Lange and the wine is in the world. So it's more like I became aware that I was studying an important profession because you can always change methods. So you have to learn one, or you see the one that your father is using at home, and you can also create your own. So the school gave me the things to decide how I want to create my wine.
Mm-hmm. Between getting to know people and also having a better goal and idea that this is how you're going to do it. The confidence. I think confidence is really important when you go to school, right? You know, I mean, you just don't know before you go. And then afterwards you say, yes, I do know what I'm doing. And that's helpful. All right. I want to really talk about the Dolcetto Indiano and the climate, the terroir, and why Diano is so different for Dolcetto. What you think the terroir brings to Dolcetto that's different from other places? Because it is very different. And you make these exquisite Dolcettos. The wines are so good. I would love for you to talk about the area and why you are able to make such great Dolcetto.
See, it's interesting. Diano d'Alba is, of course, one of the best places on earth to produce Dolcetto. I agree.
Yes.
I think it's not only the soil. I think it's a mistake to attribute so much importance to the soil.
Mm-hmm.
We need to also give importance to the man who decides to plant the Dolcetto in the best position and to believe that it's worth resisting and not to extirpating, especially today, to offer the chance to taste a good Dolcetto. Dolcetto has also to be produced with the earth, not only with the soil, with the earth, also with the love. Diano d'Alba is so special because people left a lot of good vineyards planted with Dolcetto. Dolcetto is quite sensitive, needs a white soil that normally is the best color of the soil here in the Lange. It doesn't need too much fertile soil, so we need some position like the really good Sori in Diano d'Alba are this slope in the hills kissed by the sun for all the day, where Dolcetto can really grow beautiful grapes and get some of the best ripened Dolcetto grapes. But first is people that have to believe to plant a Dolcetto in these beautiful places, because here in the Sori, today I'm speaking from the vineyard, so I'm in the middle of our Sori di Crava. Here is really a place where you can grow anything. Anything will give you some incredible results. So the main difference between Diano d'Alba and the other Dolcetto is that mainly in Diano d'Alba, best vineyards is Dolcetto planted, not the others. So we can give you some really stunning Dolcetto.
You use the word Sori. Can you explain what that means for people that don't know?
Yes. Sori, it's a Piemontese dialect word that means the best sunny place. So is the hills exposed to the sun. In general, is sun southeast to southwest, so it's the most exposed vineyards. Sori is also used with some important names of wine. For us, is the best place to grow vineyards. Diano d'Alba has his own Sori map, so it's an MGA, is a mention we can add to our label to indicate that the vineyard is in a one of the best places. So it's officially mapped. It's like the MGAs of Barbaresco and Barolo, but the same is done with the Dolcetto. And it's done around the same age, so in 1960s.
So it was done way before the current MGA map.
Officially came up together.
Okay.
So also the maps of Barolo and Barbaresco that we use today are official since 2010.
Mm-hmm.
But they were mapped and used before. Not officially, not with all the names we have today, but they born in the same moment.
Yeah, that's one of the big problems, though, with the MGA maps of Barolo. Some people say there's too many, and some people got to have an MGA, even though maybe they shouldn't have, and it's political. And yeah, you know, down in Barolo, they fight about this nonstop.
In Dolcetto is also the same.
Oh, really?
Maybe worse. Because Diano d'Alba, Dolcetto di Diano d'Alba is really, really little. Totally, it's like 200 hectares of Dolcetto di Diano d'Alba vineyards.
Yeah.
So it's really nothing. In these vineyards, it's only a single village for the Dolcetto production. So it's Diano d'Alba village only for the Dolcetto di Diano d'Alba production. It's a DOCG wine and has 76 official MGAs.
Oh my gosh.
So we have half the number of the MGAs of the Barolo, but we are in a really tiny, tiny, tiny area. If Barolo is difficult, imagine Diano d'Alba is even more. In Diano d'Alba, they decided to give a name to each hill. So we have the hill Sori dei Crava, and the hill beside, it's called in another way. It's like looking with a magnificator. It's too little to understand for the big public, but it's also good for us because if you look at the vineyards, differences are really alive. It's also that we need a lot of time to explain that. It's also really difficult to get, but it's true.
As we take this break from the show, I hope you're enjoying this podcast. Giulio is very sweet. He is shy, and he is the perfect person to have on the show to explain to us the beauty and the majesty of Diano d'Alba. So I hope that you are getting a lot out of the show, and I hope that you're going to run out and buy a bottle of Dolcetto, hopefully from Abrigo Giovanni, which is just so good. The wines are delicious. I hope you can get your hands on them wherever you are. They are pretty widely distributed. We'll talk about that in the second part of the show. I do want to say two things. First of all, do not forget that if you want the back catalog, all the old episodes of Wine for Normal People, you will need to join Patreon. That's a perk of Patreon now. patreon.com/wineFor Normal People, and you will get instant access to the entire back catalog. Join today. Also, Wine Access. Now, I said at the beginning that Wine Access has a refer a friend program. If you didn't know about this, it's such an awesome way for you to get lots of really great credits for wines. So you can go to wineaccess.com/WFMP. That will get you into the site. If you've never ordered before, you'll get 10% off your first order. If you're a regular orderer and you want to refer a friend, you go down to the bottom, see Join Us and the Refer a Friend link. Click on that and you'll get an email where you can share your link. When your friend places their first order of $150 or more, you both get a $50 credit. This is awesome. Wine Access has such great wines. You'll definitely be giving your friend the gift of access through Wine Access, and you'll be getting $50 off your next order. When you go on Wine Access's site, you can check out a page of my picks, the wines that I am enjoying right now, and you can also join the Wine for Normal People Wine Access Wine Club. 4 shipments a year for $150 each, 6 bottles. All the wines are selected by me, and they are selected specifically for you. I like to think that I know what your tastes are, and I make sure that all the wines that go into each shipment are really going to be things that are interesting to you and things that you're going to like. Check out my picks, wineaccess.com/WFMP, or the Wine Access Wine for Normal People Wine Club at wineaccess.com/normal. And don't forget, bunch of classes coming up. If you want to register for those classes, go to winefornormalpeople.com/classes. The Whites of Italy, it's at a EU-UK friendly time on Saturday, March 30th. So sign up for that. Wines of Austria, the first time I have taught that by itself, and we'll have many more coming up. So check it out today, wineformnormalpeople.com/classes. Now let's get back to the show. Okay, well, so can you explain the difference in the flavors that you get from one site versus another and why? Just so we understand it.
Yeah, I give a try. In our Sori di Grava is 4 hectare. It's all down the house where we live and where we have the cellar. In Sori di Grava, it's planted with different ages of vineyards. So we have the oldest before 68, before my grandparents bought the land here. So it's the oldest one. We don't know exactly when it was planted, but we are still running the vineyard. In this place is the lowest. It's also the steepest. So we can get some extremely ripe grapes. These good ripe grapes has a lot of good tannins. Garabay is the vineyard where we produce our Dolcetto Superiore. So for that vineyard, we can push a bit more on the extraction so we can have more tannins. And the end, we have a more complex wine. It's not really the typical Dolcetto, it's something more, but it gives you the idea of the place, the vineyard, the single vineyard. And it's in the middle of the Sori di Grava. So it's the same soil type, is more or less the same position. The difference is the steepest, and it looks also more a bit in southwest, but it's really little differences.
A little bit more ripeness on the Garabay than on the Grava.
There is more ripeness, and there is more concentration of flavors because of
the slope.
The steep and also the tiny grapes we get from there.
Got it.
So there is more skin than juice than in the Sori di Grava area. Sori di Grava area, we divided in at least 3 different tanks. So we reason in tank and in vineyard, because when we do the harvest, we harvest a portion of the vineyard and we put everything in a 5,000 liters tank. We have little tanks, so we can divide a lot. With these 3 different tanks, for example, we have one, it's a part, the historical Sori di Grava. It gave us more fruit, more juice, so less tannins. We mix together with the other tank that give us more flower aromas instead of fruit. And then we mix together sometimes, it depends by the vintage, also with the parts that give us a touch of texture, a touch of tannins. Mm-hmm. So for example, our Sori di Grava is a single label, but it's made with 3 different plots in this little Sori di Grava vineyards, but each of them are different tanks, so you can feel these differences. It's everything about tannins, flower or fruit notes, also with the concentration. So there are some parts of the vineyard that are more rich in taste and some other that are more easy to drink. So we can mix together to play a bit with the Sori di Grava, with the Dolcetto differences.
You really have to know your vineyard in order to make the wine. You have to know exactly what you're pulling out of, because if you just looked at it, it could look all the same. But you know, at a certain point where the more tannic wines stop and the juicier wines start, you really have to know that. I mean, it's pretty amazing how familiar you are with each row, because it's such a small plot. Talking about 10 acres, 4 hectares, it's incredible to have separate parcels where you know exactly what it is that's producing this. And you may not know exactly what the, I mean, it sounds like some of it is the orientation, is it south or southwest and the slope and things like that, but it really makes a huge difference. Now, you don't use a lot of processes in the cellar, right? You're pretty hands-off.
Yes, I'm really involved in it. Like each of us, I would say, because from my father that teaches us how to make wine, to my brother Sergio is the official winemaker of our winery. So he studied in Alba like me, but he also studied in the University of Oenological Studies. So he is a doctor in wine.
Wow.
And together he also met a friend of us that today is like a double employee. So it's Luca that also worked for us, and they met in the oenological school and then university together. Each of us has his hands in the process. We are independent wine grower, so we are Vignaioli Indipendenti, and we love to produce the wine with our own taste in wine. This is important to keep the tradition alive, but the tradition is not only something that stays in the past, it's also something that connected with today. But it's important because when you imagine a dolcetto, I think you need to think to the past. So we are all involved in the process. We do the wine following our heart, taste, and brain also, of course.
Right, without a lot of additives, right?
No, today it's common in the era. So I'm happy that in most of the Lange families in wine, we are trying to reduce. During the 50 plus years, methods have changed a lot.
Yes.
But I can guarantee you that we use really simple techniques and tools, but we have refined it with deep knowledge. So we have worked in the direction of reducing intervention. So today we do cold stabilization, we do clarification, we do filtration.
Mm-hmm.
So we do it. It's not that we don't do it. I prefer less intervention to the zero intervention, because I think it's important to give a wine that is good for many, many years. So we also use sulfur less than the past. So it's everything in the direction of reduction. So we want to use everything as minimum as we can.
It's sort of like the difference between getting organic or biodynamic certification and being sustainable, which you are, where you have more freedom and you can make choices that you need to. And sometimes those choices are better for your land and for the wine and for other things than being completely purist and saying it has to be organic. And if it's not organic, then it's not good. I have some issues with that, just being so strict about all of that. What do you think about that?
It's complicated. Today, it's also possible to think about being organic also in our ales. So 20 years ago was really more difficult than today, because today we have less rain, we have more perfect machines.
Mm-hmm.
So we also the media forecast are better. So today we are still not organic, but it's matter of paperwork. It's also more expensive. It's also something you have to strongly believe before taking this route. So for example, my father, it's not in that direction, but now we are changing. So we still did something in that direction. So it's around 10 years ago. Mostly of us in Lange quit with the chemical herbicide.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good passage. I think more than half of the people that do this don't declare it. Then for us in vintages, we know perfectly our vineyards. And in some vintages, like for example, the 2022 we had, it is easier to be organic. So we did. We treat the vineyards in the organic way. In some other vintages, like the last one, the 23,
yep,
it was a bit more difficult. We decided to be free to decide when to do it or not. I know it's not the same organic producer that produces it in the organic way, the grapes. I love them. I really look after them. But at the moment, we decided to do differently.
You have to worry about your economics also. You can't lose everything.
Also.
Yes.
And we are in a phase that we are developing a lot of things. It's something I think in the future we are looking into, but at the moment, not. We always work slowly.
It's a big decision and you have to do what you think is right. On that subject, Dolcetto is so difficult to grow. And so isn't that part of the factor? Can you talk about how you really do have to love Dolcetto to grow it? Can you talk about how difficult it is to farm Dolcetto to get good flavors out of it? How picky it is?
Yeah. Dolcetto is a strange guy. I want to show you a different light on Dolcetto, because Dolcetto is truly difficult. We are trying to make dolcetto grown vertically when dolcetto is really a flabby variety. So it goes down and down, and we spend double the time compared to the Nebbiolo to make this dolcetto grown straight, and it doesn't wanna. So we are working for nothing at the end. In late July, when the bunches of dolcetto get ripe with really light wind, the dolcetto can go down completely. So we are working a bit for nothing. The dolcetto, the plant has also some good point, especially today. I prefer today to point to them. For example, dolcetto has a really good resistance to the frost, to the spring frost, especially because the buds sprouts later. So it's the last variety here in Lange that put out leaves, so it suffer less the frost. On the other hand, also the period of ripening is shorter. So the dolcetto is the first variety we harvest. The phase is shorter than the other. This means that we do less treatments. So also for the organic cultivation, dolcetto is not that bad because it doesn't suffer too much time the disease. Critically, disease period for the dolcetto is shorter. You can treat less. For the rot, the grapes are quite healthy, so they doesn't rot because the harvest is done in the beginning to the middle of September. It's normally quite hot and dry period, so it doesn't suffer the problem of rotten grapes. These, I think, are really important good things about dolcetto we need to think. Dolcetto needs more the elevation compared to the other. So dolcetto needs more the altitude. Also, if in the moment the cellar is about around 350 meters, the Anadalba village goes up to 500. In this area, the dolcetto is very well because can have some chill breeze that make the ripening good. But also, dolcetto is kind of scared about the drop of temperature that we have like during the Nebbiolo harvest. In late September, where the shift of temperature between night and day become heavy, the dolcetto suffer a bit.
Right.
So dolcetto, it's more of an average requirement in the temperature. It's good in hot and maybe better than in cold. And it's good with the elevation, and it suffer the night and day shifts, especially during the harvest. So these are the characteristics related to the temperature.
To the temperature. So climate change has been okay for dolcetto.
At the moment, climate change has already changed our wines. I'm working in the business since 2013. And all the vintages I had are going in the hotter direction. For the moment, I see a change for the better because we are still producing really, really good vintages of dolcetto. I'm looking at the 22. It's the dolcetto we are currently selling. Dolcetto Soli di Cava 22 and Garabay 21. So for the Superiore is 1 year older. But in the case of 22, it was an extreme hot and dry vintage. We were really scared about that vintage. So we did the harvest. The wine in the tank were extremely fresh, fruited, with really a good balance between freshness and ripeness. So it was really, really good. I think we are now in a good moment. We only need to look for the future, because it's matter of how fast will be the changing. For the moment, it's still okay.
Yep.
And compared to the 80s, it's of course better. But for Nebbiolo, for Barbera, for Dolcetto also. And also, I love Dolcetto. Also, the wine Dolcetto is really contemporary. It's really balanced. It's a sincere wine that tells the territory and also the vintage very well. There is no talk for aging, for barrels, for complicated concepts of winemaking. And we can relax sipping a dolcetto without thinking we have to understand it. It's really one of the best wines for normal people, I think.
I agree. So if people are thinking I could choose Diano or I could choose Dogliani or Ovada or, some of the, how would you compare Diano to Dogliani, for example? Because I think people who drink Dolcetto know Dogliani and they know Diano, but maybe they don't know the difference between those two.
There are differences of soil composition, but it's also a lot about the style in winemaking. Normally, I say that Dolcetto from Diano d'Alba is more balanced. It's a bit more fresh, more delicate than Dogliani, because in Dogliani, generally, they pushed a bit more in the body of the Dolcetto, with the body of Dolcetto, also because of the soil, of course. But they have some more bold Dolcetto compared to Diano d'Alba. So Diano d'Alba is more of elegance. Dogliani is more if you want to try a Dolcetto with a bit more body,
Yeah, a little
the
heavier.
heavier.
Yeah.
And Ovada in that is kind of really different because it's quite far from us. So it's a complete different era with different climate, with different people living there. The styles in Dolcetto winemaking are really different from the traditional way. So if you are curious to find something new related to Dolcetto, you can point to Ovada because it's there than where people experiment more.
So less traditional.
It's less traditional.
You don't know what you're going to get out of it. It's probably true too, right?
It can be,
Yes.
yes, it can be.
And it can be very expensive too. So you'd really have to know who you're buying from to know that. I do want to talk about the Barolo from the MJ Rivera in Novello, because even though Dolcetto is the main thing that you do, you have won a lot of praise for that Barolo. And I do just want to say that it seems like it coincides directly with when you started working at the winery, is doesn't it? For
Yeah,
the
it
last,
is.
so you are the reason why you have this amazing Barolo, which is not even the main thing that you do, but has been unbelievable. I mean, people just love it. How do you treat the Nebbiolo, and how do you get such an amazing wine out of this small place? I mean, Novello is, people don't really know it. It's one of these smaller of the 11 places in Barolo zone, but it does have some really great sites. So how are you doing this? I think that this is your wine, really.
But Novello is not the littlest of Barolo because the little one is Cherasco together with Diano d'Alba.
Right.
Also,
Okay.
Diano d'Alba is one of the 11 villages in Barolo area.
Yep.
It's really the little one. Novello is kind of important for the Barolo. It's true, we started to produce Barolo Ravera in 2013. In fact, it's me. It's more like my parents asked me what about to rent a vineyard in Barolera. I immediately said yes without knowing nothing about, but I said yes because I was really excited to start to produce the Barolo. It's of course the most important wine we have in the area with the more history and everything. But if I look back now, I can really say that we didn't not know the Ravera at all. Our working method consists in learn by direct experience. So it's not fast or effective method, but it allows us to find our own way. So we started the Barolo adventure free from many preconceptions. We really started to make Barolo based on our experience as Dolcetto producers. And today I see it as a distinguishing element, especially when we speak of Barolos. Modern Barolo of today are the one with more drinkability, and this makes me happy because we always produce Barolo and wines in that way. Ravera it's quite huge. It's a larger MGA. It's 130 hectares in total, and it's homogeneous. Being bigger is not so easy to have an idea of perfect Ravera in mind. So there is some uniformity.
In the soil type or in the orientation, or why is it uniform?
In the soil type, Mostly, yes. Soil types in Barroleras are three different, mostly. We can divide them in three principal soil type. There is the Arenaria di Diano d'Alba, is the sandstone, named after Diano d'Alba village, because Diano d'Alba has a lot of these sandstones on top of the village. So you can also find in the upper Ravera, top of the hills in the Barroleira are made of these rock sands. So the vineyards that are directly under are affected by this richness in sand more than the other. So the top hill are made of this. And then we have the Marne di Sant'Agata. So it's a Sant'Agata Marls. Is, I think, most diffuse soil type. And in this case is where we have the vineyards. So we have the vineyards in this central part of the Ravera. The Ravera has in common a good elevation. It really starts from 350 meters and it goes up about 480 meters. We are in 420. So we are in the almost the middle. For the exposition, it's mostly east and southeast. It can change a bit because in 100 and more hectares, there are two, three hills. So there is a hill, is the most important hill, is it has also the south face, but for the rest is mostly east and southeast. In our 2 hectares, we have both. We have 1 hectare in east and 1 hectare in southeast. The Ravera give us great freshness. We have experienced also a real improvement in the ripening as the vintages warm up in the last year. So it definitely is one of the areas that is benefiting of the climate change.
Climate change, yeah.
It's also interesting for us because it's like we met the perfect vineyard for our Barolo taste. We are really happy about it. And in addition, for us to starting to produce Barolo was really important because we entered the competition together with most important wineries in the area. There is a lot that we learned from that competition. I can say we also used something we learned for our Nebbiolo, for our Barbera, for our Dolcetto. So it was the right occasion for level up everything.
I think it's really interesting. I have another friend who makes Zinfandel, you know, Zinfandel in California.
Yes.
They have a lighter style Zinfandel, and they also make Pinot Noir and they make Cabernet Sauvignon from grapes that they buy. And she said that when they're making their Pinot and Cab, they are making it sort of in the same style that they make their Zinfandel, which is this lighter style. And it sounds to me like this is another example of that. You're taking the Dolcetto mentality and applying it to Barolo. And of course, it's going to be successful because people don't know how great Dolcetto is, but you spend so much time on it. If you apply that idea and that knowledge to Nebbiolo, you can probably get something a lot more drinkable and things that people will really enjoy. It's an interesting idea that you're not looking at it as a Barolo producer, but you're looking at it through the lens of a Dolcetto producer. But it has produced this amazing wine as a result, which then goes back to the idea that everybody should be drinking Dolcetto because it is an amazing wine and it's something that people really, really enjoy. And nobody does it better than you. I just want to thank you so much. I wish the only gripe I have with you, you know, is that your Nocciole is not available in the US. So everybody is going to have to come visit you in Diano to get it. Because listen, you guys who are listening to this, it is worth a trip to Diano to go have these wines and to go get some Nocciole. I wish I'd bought 10 cases of it. It's so freaking delicious. If you are, oh my gosh. Anyway, I'm savoring it. I still have a little bit left. I'm just letting you know. It's so good. But thank you so much, Giulio, for being here. I know you were hesitant about doing this. I hope that you had some fun. I hope that you like telling your story because your story is different from a lot of other Barolo producers or Barbaresco producers or Roero producers that we have because you're small and your family has stuck to the way you've done things for so long and it's been so successful. So I wish you all the best. You're amazing. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you very much, Elizabeth. And I'm really happy to be a dolcetto producer and to be also a hazelnut producer, to be a Favorita, Barolo, Nebbiolo. We are planning to produce also more varieties, more things in the future, because we love diversity and we love to learn a lot of things about everything. So I'm really happy to have the possibility to share my story, my bit of knowledge, and I hope people enjoyed it. I had fun. Yes.
Good.
Thank you so much.
And the wines are available in the US, in the UK, and Canada also?
Yes. For the wines, we are working on it, are now available in the US, like New York and New Jersey. Mm-hmm. We have an importer here. It's called Elevation. So you can look after him. You can email him. Also in Ohio, we also have an importer in California. And for the UK, we never sell some wines there, but we are planning. I will have an important meeting in May, so things are moving. For the Australia, we will soon start with an importer for the Barolo especially.
Oh, great.
So we will be soon also in the Australian market. But everything is new because it's something we are working right now, just in the last few years after COVID. So it's...
Yep.
Everything is quite fresh.
All right. Well, the Australians who listen to the show are fantastic. They're going to be really excited. I'm so glad. New York is a great place to have distribution because they can ship to other states, which is fantastic. And it's good news for our UK listeners also that they'll soon be able to get your wine. So thank you so much for being on the show. And with that, this has been another episode of Wine for Normal People. Thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you next time.